But today is VE Day. The war is
over. The crown queen waves from the balcony.
Eagle has landed. Apollo 11 has landed.
Tearing down the Berlin Wall.
Since 1929, the Monks Investment Trust's mission has been to help investors grow their wealth. We aim to do this today by taking a three-dimensional approach to growth. Cyclical growth, rapid growth, and steady growth.
The World Wide Web.
Wall Street is in turmoil as stocks crash.
The Monks Investment Trust, managed by Bailey Gifford. Capital at risk.
Hello and welcome to The Wealth Show, where we discuss the key topics shaping the UK wealth management industry and investors' portfolios. My name is Jack McRae, and we're joined today by Bentley Reed CEO Peter Clark. It's almost 20 years since Peter first joined the firm, stepping into the top job in 2023. He's led Bentley Reed's expansion into the Middle East and established the company's Dubai office in November last year. Welcome, Peter.
Hi, Jack. Good to see you.
Thank you for coming on. We're speaking on the 3rd of March and under quite uniquely intense circumstances. It's just days after the United States and Israel launched attacks on Iran, with explosions heard across the Middle East, including Dubai, where, Peter, you have found a new home. Firstly, how are you? How are the family and Bentley holding up?
Yeah, well, thanks for asking. We're all safe and well. I think if we'd been doing this a week or so ago, it would have been quite a different conversation. But look, with the caveat that, as you say, we're literally day four into this, it's a hugely fluid situation. Not many people, myself included, would have expected the events to unfold as they did. Starting on Saturday. But you know what? It became apparent very, very quickly, certainly in the first 24 hours, that the authorities in the UAE, which is where I'm based, are handling this remarkably well. Communication has been very good, which helps during times of uncertainty like this. And more importantly, really, the defense mechanisms that they have in place, particularly in regards to sort of protecting us, other civilians, key landmarks from the missiles that are coming in, are proving to be exceptionally effective so far. And that sort of, in a strange way, gives a sense of security, even though you know that there's something pretty big going on around you. And I've had that feedback from a lot of other friends, contacts out here in the last 72 hours or so. You know, there's this eerie sense of calm. Look, people are uncertain. They're sort of focused in on sort of the very short term and what it means for their situation and their families, etc., as am I, right? But you know, as a general sort of sentiment here at the moment, it's probably a lot calmer on the ground than it might feel like if you're just watching stuff and reading about things from outside of the region.
Yeah, and I'm sure you've had plenty of clients giving you calls and asking you advice. And what's been the number one question clients have been asking you?
Good question. I don't even think there has been one, really. You know, the general trend has been that the focus has been much more on their very specific circumstances. You know, there's been conversations had with clients and other people, for that matter. Everyone's just sort of talking through what you're thinking. You know, do you even entertain the idea of trying to leave the region if or when flights reopen, hopefully within the next sort of few days? And the overwhelming sort of feedback from the get-go is that, you know, 99% of people I speak to, myself included, are firmly staying put, going back to that point about you feel safe. So most of the conversations with clients specifically have been around, you know, just kicking the tires on what they're thinking and why. It hasn't been so much about the investment side of things or their broader wealth arrangements. That may come in time. I do, though, think that, you know, it's been remarkable, actually, and a positive surprise in a way, that very few of the conversations, if any, really have been or having this sense of panic about what it might mean for their investment portfolios or their financial situation. And I think that's for a couple of reasons, one of which is if you're on the ground, as I say, you're a lot calmer than you probably would be if you were just reading about this or looking at it and scrolling through social media. And I think the second aspect is, you know, we're becoming so prone to these big exogenous events in markets, particularly over the last 5-10 years, whether it be COVID, the Russia-Ukraine war, tariffs, whatever it might be, right? And I think more and more clients, particularly our clients, because, you know, most of them are with us have been with us for many years, if not decades, they just become more, they're becoming more used to this volatility. We've made a big deal in recent years of saying, look, we don't think this volatility is going away. So you have to position your portfolios and your investment strategy around the idea that parts of it are going to be jumping around quite a lot. Whatever the reason, it just happens to be geopolitics this time around. And you know, I think our approach, highly personalized approach, the fact that, you know, we build investment strategies that are very derived from the client's specific needs and wants rather than just a sort of cookie cutter, put everyone into a certain risk bucket. I think that really helps, because then when you get this heightened uncertainty, particularly from an exogenous event, the benchmark really for the client then is going back to, you know, well, if my equities do come under, I mean, ironically, the equity market has been pretty becalmed over the last day or so, but hypothetically, let's say when equities do get hit, you know, if we can then sort of point them to other parts of their portfolio that are in there to be much less volatile, or in there as the hedges, insurance policies, whatever you want to call it, it just really helps then for them to sort of compartmentalize what bits of their portfolios are doing and why, and always linking it back to their personal situation. So long-winded way of saying that, you know, that there's been some quite wide-ranging conversations over the last few days. Mostly it's around, you know, how's everyone feeling? Are they safe and sound? Very little of it is on the specifics of the market impact so far. That may change, but even then, you know, I think so much of it then will relate to the client's individual circumstances that we'll just approach it on a case-by-case basis.
Yeah, Bentley Reed's been managing wealth for over 40 years. And how does this week or weekend compare to past historical shocks you've seen?
I mean, I don't think it's necessarily any different to the sort of, we've had two or three of these this decade alone. You know, I'd say it feels a little bit more personal this time because I'm sat in the middle of it where missiles have been getting intercepted literally overhead. But, you know, to me, in terms of if I put exclusively my Bentley Reed and professional hat on rather than my personal and family one, this is no different really to certainly the pandemic. You know, the pandemic actually felt a lot bigger because in my lifetime, there's been a lot more precedent for geopolitical events and war to disrupt things, less so the pandemic. So that felt a little bit bigger, if anything. Then we had the inflation scare born of the Russia-Ukraine war. You know, again, from a market perspective, this is looking much less sinister than that so far. I don't think for a minute that what we've seen over the last few days is anything out of the ordinary in terms of, you know, recent market history. And I've been in this game long enough now, I think, as of my colleagues, particularly in the investment team in London where they sit. And, you know, the general rule, we used to have it written up on the whiteboard, I think it probably is still there as well, you know, so don't try and trade geopolitics. Don't try and, you know, be too cute around it, because many have tried and failed to do that over several years and decades. And geopolitics typically has much less of an impact on markets, particularly over the medium and long term, than many perceive. Now, obviously, there's some caveats to that. If we do genuinely get a sustained energy price shock, then it fundamentally changes the outlook for markets, the economy and the like. But we're a long way away from that being a very real issue at the moment. So we just go back to that idea of, you know, if in doubt, particularly when geopolitics comes to the fore, your best bet is to try and do nothing. But again, that comes back to, you know, you've got to have the right investment strategy and right conversations in place with your clients well in the lead up to those events actually taking place.
Yeah, and we've written and read many stories of British citizens and businesses like yourself moving to Dubai in recent years, with almost 250,000 estimated to live in Dubai, British citizens to live in Dubai. Was this a key driver of your own move to the region in November?
Oh, very much so. I mean, in many ways, so just taking a step back, I think, as you know, sort of Bentley Reed is, we've been an international business since day one, and it's well over 40 years now and almost 50 years. You know, our history has always been sort of out in Hong Kong and Asia. We've had an office out there for that entire time frame. And where we've sort of developed quite long-standing expertise and insights now is looking after what I'd call international clients, whether they're expats, because it's not all British. I mean, don't get me wrong, the British cohort has been a key part of our international client base for a long time and remains the case. But we look after international families and local families in Hong Kong, for instance, that aren't British. But they'll always typically have some sort of British wealth link, whether that be assets, family links there, tax exposure, whatever it might be. And where we've always appeal to certain clients is the ability to handle their cross-border arrangements, and particularly their where there's a UK access involved, being able to provide that all under one roof and be the conductor for it. And that might be tax advice for cross-border aspects, certainly on the investment management side, where, you know, if you're managing money in just one jurisdiction or for clients that are just focused on one jurisdiction, I would personally argue it's very different to if you have multiple different jurisdictions involved. You have to look after probably different user currencies for the same client. You have to almost certainly look at it more of a global opportunity set, rather biased to a particular region or currency asset class. You definitely have to be aware of the tax implications of what you're doing from an investment perspective. We outsource all of our banking and custody, and we have to be able to work with partners who can facilitate both UK onshore asset safekeeping and also offshore, and so on. That is what we've done for 50 years almost now. So it comes naturally to us. And we've been looking into Dubai, funny enough, in the Middle East for about 20 years. We're lucky we've got a couple of long-standing clients in Hong Kong who have been with us for much of our history. They were quite instrumental in this part of the world, setting up businesses, some of the institutions over the last couple of decades. And they very kindly said for quite a while, saying, you know, our approach, the fact we're very relationship-driven, we're not huge, we only look after a few hundred families, the fact we're truly holistic and cater to a number of service requirements, very transparent about fee schedules, all that sort of stuff, would probably stand out well in somewhere like Dubai, which is a fast-growing, fast-maturing industry, but is more nascent than, say, the UK and Hong Kong, which is where we spent the bulk of our history. So that's always been interesting and stood out. But the real catalyst, going back to your point, was we, like most businesses, about 2 years ago, started to see more and more of our clients. And if it wasn't the clients, it was maybe some of their next gen in the family. Or if it wasn't the client family itself, it was definitely amongst our contact base of intermediary networks and the like. It was very obvious that both from the UK and indeed Asia at the time, more and more of our type of clients, including some of the clients themselves, were moving to this part of the world.
Do you think the narrative that everyone is moving to Dubai is a tad overblown, or is that fair?
Oh, I think that's overblown. You know, I can only say we're not a huge business. We look after a few hundred families, right? And we're talking about a handful that have actually made the move so far. And, you know, I would say out of those two dynamics that we saw, which was people leaving Hong Kong and Singapore to come here, and also the UK, the Asia to Middle East dynamic, from what I see at least, has eased off a lot. You know, in fact, it's probably a sign that Asia and, you know, we're noticing in Hong Kong is really starting to fire again over the last 6 months or so in a good way. And that's great because it's been a tough few years out there. And I suspect more and more people, they might have been looking for an exit to go to somewhere like the Middle East from Asia. For a better opportunity, but they're now seeing that opportunity back at home. From the UK side of things, you know, there's no doubt that that flow is still in place. I don't think it's necessarily as one-sided as people make out. Indeed, you know, we help families on both sides of it, you know, when they're relocating back to the UK from somewhere like Hong Kong or Dubai. And there are still, you know, quite a few people making the move back home. It won't always necessarily be a financial motive to do so. It will typically be, you know, maybe elderly parents are getting sick, or it's typically often around child's education, particularly secondary age, so on. So that's quite an often overlooked dynamic that we see at the front line of people moving back to the UK as well. But, you know, a host of conversations I've had literally since the turn of the year, you're seeing, you know, quite a lot of business owners in the UK still looking to move to not just the UAE, but outside of the UK. And then, you know, the motivation then is typically the fiscal regime. And that flow is still happening.
What does Dubai offer global wealth managers today that the likes of London or Hong Kong or Malta, where you're also stationed, don't?
Oh, it does. I wouldn't say it offers us anything different here to what it offers our Hong Kong, UK businesses or our trust business in Malta. The reality is, you know, we're a pretty traditional private client wealth manager in many ways. We offer a lot more services under that one roof than maybe some others, but to all intents and purposes, the underlying services are very similar to what you'll see in other parts. But our focus is exclusively on high and ultra high net worth individuals. You know, so that speaks to our relatively finite client book, and we're not looking to become a behemoth. going back to that point I made a moment ago, is just that some of our existing clients, and certainly the type of families that I think we do a good job for, which is those high ultra high net worths with cross-border requirements, there's just a number of them here now. Like, there has always been a number of them in Hong Kong. There's a number of very wealthy people still committed to the UK. And for us, it's just, we've gone on a nice growth phase over the last few years. And this was the next step of that, really, to take advantage of the opportunity here. But also unashamedly to make sure that the people that we already have looked after for quite a while, if they've relocated here already, we want to make sure we're on the ground. I think the one thing that's changed a lot from conversations with, I mean, they're probably competitors of ours out here, but there's a very collaborative feel, so we all share and compare notes. And one of the conversations I've had with people out here is that probably up until COVID, the fly-in, fly-out model for advisors, whether you're in our space or other parts of the industry, was still working quite effectively. I would argue that that trend has diminished, probably for good reason as well. You know, you need to be physically on the ground now and have a fixed presence. And that's particularly true of a business like ours, which is very much relationship driven. So, you know, even if we'd spotted, before we'd committed to open up the office, had we spotted an opportunity and just tried to do it in a way that we wouldn't fully commit to the region with, you know, the regulatory licenses and a permanent office and people on the ground, then, you know, I think the industry has evolved against that trend now. You need to be here in person.
Yeah. And I mean, you mentioned your competitors. There's a lot of different wealth managers looking to establish a presence in the UAE and the Middle East more widely. What differentiates you and your service?
I mean, it's always a difficult one to answer because there's something that stood out to me. I arrived here about 12 months or so ago now, and you know, it's a much more mature market than it would have been when I first started coming down here 20 odd years ago. So that's good. You know, there's a lot more integrity in terms of the institutional framework that's provided by, we're in the financial free zone, the DIFC, and then you've got the regulator, the DFSA, that oversees that. And reminds me a lot of our regulated businesses in the UK, Hong Kong, and indeed in Europe. I think the one thing that probably does differentiate us from the majority, not all, but the majority, is that we do a lot more than just, say, wealth advice or just investment management. The fact that we are that conductor in the orchestra for tax, investments, structuring if it's needed. We have a life insurance arm, which can be done out of our regulated business in the UK if people need that for some sort of tax planning mechanism. Our pitch to clients has always been, we take away the hassle if they don't want to have multiple different advisors across multiple different firms for all their wealth management needs. And I haven't seen that many other competitors doing that. You know, they might focus and be great at one particular discipline, but then their client will have to go to someone else for other aspects. And that's always been a business model that has worked well for us for certain types of clients and types of families in Hong Kong and the UK. And early signs are that it's proving to be pretty appealing down here as well.
Yeah, and you mentioned your clients are typically ultra high net worth, and Dubai has long been touted as a haven for these kind of individuals. And with the US-Israeli campaign against Iran now implicating many surrounding nations, do you think that could impact that status?
Look, I mean, I'm no geopolitical expert, but, you know, if you look at past events where cities or countries have been besieged by military action or terrorism, you know, UK being a prime example, I grew up with the IRA bombing the mainland consistently. You know, then you had the 7/7 attacks where I was in London and I'm commuting into the office that day. It's not necessarily military based, but Hong Kong has had a really tough few years during COVID and the lockdowns, extended lockdowns there. The constant feature is always, in my opinion anyway, that really good, robust, resilient cities, they come bouncing back, right? It might take a little while, but on every single occasion that I've personally experienced, of course, in the initial reaction, I myself might sometimes think, crikey, has this changed things fundamentally? Is this the end of it? A bit like we all thought COVID would change everything that we've always done, and certain aspects might have evolved, but, you know, certain things came bouncing straight back. I'm personally of the view that this will only make the UAE stronger. I say it might take a little while for the full level of confidence to return, and if that's the case, then so be it. But this is now the second event in 6 years where, at least so far, the authorities here have proven themselves to be very competent in handling these shocks, COVID being the other example. You know, this was one of the first major hubs in the world to reopen in the early stage of the pandemic, and I think they've benefited from that ever since. And the reaction so far, and now as a resident in this part of the world, the relative safety that I feel for me and my young family, despite all that's going on literally overhead, I think will only add to the credibility of the place amongst our sort of clients, so high and ultra high net worths, the service providers that cater to them, but a host of other industries as well, because it's not just wealth management and finance down here anymore. There's a thriving tech industry. There's always been a big energy industry down here and the like. And I suspect that will become apparent. And if I was a betting man, I'd probably say that becomes a bit more apparent more quickly than most people, maybe myself, even think it will do.
Yeah, but also, if there is conflict escalation, does the threat of, say, a regional war force you to rethink your Middle East expansion?
No, I don't think so. In the same way that when, you know, London was getting hit by the IRA regularly, you know, it was slightly before my time from a Bentley Reed chief exec perspective, but businesses just, you crack on, right? It's a slightly sort of British sentiment, but that is very much the feeling that's down here at the moment amongst me and many, many others. You know, the worst thing to do, particularly at this relatively early stage of the conflict, is to make any sort of knee-jerk reaction, whether that's on an individual client's arrangements, and particularly with something as strategic as the business side of things. You know, we've just survived as a business 3 years of Hong Kong being on lockdown, long after the world had opened back up. And don't get me wrong, there are times during that three-year period where you thought, has this fundamentally changed forever, right? Our place in Hong Kong, and there's quite an emotional attachment to it because it's where we've built our business out of over the last half a century. But we knuckled down, many of our competitors left, a lot of the target clients left, some of the existing clients moved to other parts of the world, like I was talking about earlier. But many remained, and we were one of the few businesses, particularly of our size and independence, to persevere. We never really knew when it would turn around, but we just had faith that it would. And I think we're now starting to get rewarded for that, because, as I say, in the last 6 months in particular, Hong Kong as a city is now really bouncing back, slightly different to the city it was in 2019, but it is still a very vibrant, economically thriving place, and those characteristics are coming back to the fore. My strong view is that it'll be exactly the same in the UAE. And, you know, if anything, if there is a rash reaction, then that creates more of an opportunity for those that are willing to stick it out.
Yeah, you mentioned Hong Kong there, and you've been CEO of Bentley Reed now for 3 years. Are you particularly proud of your strategy there?
I'm proud of the overall strategy and the way the teams across the group have delivered it. I wouldn't necessarily pinpoint any individual aspect of it. You know, there's been sort of plenty of opportunities and challenges that have emerged over that 3 year period. Look, my view and a lot of our approach is predicated on my opinion and those of the fellow management and shareholders, is that, you know, the industry is evolving, and there are plenty of challenges and opportunities out there. You know, I don't think it's a secret to say that there's a lot of fee competition at the moment everywhere in the world, particularly in the UK. Costs and obligations related to things like compliance and IT are only going up. I don't see that trend easing off anytime soon. You've got the very sort of clear threats and opportunities that are going to come from things like artificial intelligence. We're now getting into a much more intense phase of the transfer of wealth from the baby boomers to the next generation, and that creates interesting opportunities and dynamics for a business like us, because you effectively now have the primary, you know, client has been the parents, and, you know, you're catering to them in a particular way, and they're in the most cases likely to remain client for a long, long time, because not all of them most of them are still in the sort of 60s and 70s. But there you've got a younger generation coming through that are on an equal footing and also, you know, want and are becoming clients, and, you know, there's nuance and they have slightly different wants and needs. So my very clear remit to our incredible team across the four offices is that, you know, we're of a size, we're not a behemoth. but we're big enough now. You know, we look after well over a billion pounds, much more than that now, of assets across our various services. So we're not too small, but we're not such a large institutional, you know, business that it takes us months, if not years, to change strategy. We can be pretty nimble when opportunities arise. And that's something that I've been quite proud of. And it's meant that we've added in new initiatives like Dubai. We've, you know, born of client demand. A few years back, they said, look, we keep getting told that we need life insurance as a solution to our inheritance tax exposure in the UK. Can you help us actually source and distribute it? And we weren't doing that at the time, but, you know, when enough demand came, we quite quickly then turned around and enhanced our regulatory permissions to do it. So it's having that sort of, that we're an incredibly stable business. We've been around for a long time. We've got clients that joined us on day one, and one or two of them are still around. And if not, we're looking after their children and grandchildren in some cases now. The staff base has been remarkably stable over that period as well. So that's a key part of what we offer to our clients. But I'm also of the view that you've got to be dynamic, right? We're in a fast changing industry. There's some structural headwinds out there. You've got to find that balance and admit sometimes that you do need to add in new service lines or evolve the way you're doing things. And for the most part, I think we've struck that balance very well. And there's been some nice momentum of late.
Yeah. What would you say has been the biggest lesson you've learned in the last 3 years in charge? Is it that being nimble strategy?
Really good question. I've not been asked that before. It probably is going back to that answer I gave a moment ago, I think, and it's much, much easier said than done. And don't get me wrong, there's been many occasions where, you know, I personally could have done it better. But I think it's finding that balance between not making change for change's sake. You know, at the core, we're exactly the same business as we have been for 4 and a bit decades. But you also can't be so dogmatic that, you know, if there is very clearly client requirements changing, or particularly at the moment over that 3-year period, you know, one of the big drivers of our business activity and growth has been the fact that there's been some quite big fiscal changes, particularly within the UK. You know, that's triggered a growing demand for what we do, both from existing clients and the end users. Now, the bulk of what we were doing before that helped cater for it, but there were one or two aspects that we needed to enhance or bring in new service lines to make sure that our clients were well, you know, well equipped for the changing times. So I think it's that. And then the overriding comment is, you know, it was just reaffirmed to me what I think I knew anyway, which is if you've got good people in place, you let them get on with it, and the rest almost takes care of itself. And that's something that I've probably learned or relearned the most over the last 3 years, is if you've got confidence in the people that you have in place, which I very much do, don't get in their way. Right? Be there when they need you. And my job, I think, is to continue to communicate what we're doing and why, but then actually leaving a lot of the day-to-day stuff to some very talented people that we're lucky enough to have at Bentley Reed. And I don't need to remind myself that too often, but it's nice to do so every now and again.
Yeah, well, that seems like a good point to end on. Thank you so much for joining us, Peter, and we will see you next time on The Wealth Show.
But today is VE Day. The war is over.
The newly crowned queen waves from the balcony.
Eagle has landed. Apollo 11 has landed.
Tearing down the Berlin Wall.
Since 1929, the Marks Investment Trust's mission has been to help investors grow their wealth. We aim to do this today by taking a three-dimensional approach to growth. Cyclical growth, rapid growth, and steady growth.
The World Wide Web.
Wall Street is in turmoil as stocks crash.
The Marks Investment Trust, managed by Baillie Gifford. Capital at risk.